This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan at the studios of WOUB Radio Network in Athens, Ohio. Every day on the campaign trail, the presidential candidates address health care, education, and the economy. They present plans for Afghanistan and Iraq, but they rarely talk about immigration. 2 years ago, a comprehensive reform bill co-sponsored by John McCain and supported by Barack Obama failed. A similar bill died last year. And now immigration is not a live issue in Congress either. But a lot of states and counties and towns aren't waiting. Like a dozen others, Ohio's legislature is considering new laws on immigration, including proposals supporters call tough and critics draconian. We've talked about immigration with listeners in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. Today we want to hear from callers in states not along the border. How is the issue of immigration playing out where you live? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Jill Riepenhoff is a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Nice of you to join us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Stephanie Chekalinsky is the editorial coordinator for Fronteras de la Noticia, a Spanish language newspaper in Columbus. And welcome to you, too.
Pleased to be here.
And both are here with us in Athens. They co-wrote a series called American Divide, the Immigration Crackdown, that ran in both their papers last month. And Jill Riepenhoff of the Columbus Dispatch, let's start with you. One wouldn't think immediately that Ohio would be a flashpoint for the battle over immigration.
No, it seems a little off the beaten path. But as immigrants keep coming into the country, they keep pushing farther and farther north, largely because they come for the jobs. And places like Ohio and Michigan and other Midwestern states have largely been unaffected or ignored the issue, so to speak, because it just happened kind of quickly in the past 8 years or so. So it's a sudden issue for us, whereas in like the border states, it's been an issue for many, many years.
And I wonder, is the issue gathering momentum as the economic crisis gathers momentum?
Oh, yes. That is... Ohio has been on tough economic times for years and years and years, and this is the boiling point of they are taking jobs away from Americans. In Columbus in particular, they are the roofers, they are the landscapers, they are the fast food workers. So everywhere you go, you see immigrant labor. And let me say up front that not all immigrants are illegal. The Pew estimates that in Ohio, approximately one-third to one-half of the Hispanic population of Ohio is illegal. So the other part are legal. They're here. They're citizens. They're working here legally. But there's the perception that all are illegal.
And that's a part of the situation we're going to be talking
Great.
About throughout this show program. But Stephanie Chekalinsky of Fronteras de la Noticia, many of your readers, presumably this is issue number one.
It's certainly a big issue. And I think, but for that population as well, the economy is certainly important. Immigration in a lot of cases is subtext for the economic problems that we see across Ohio. And so, you know, while immigration is definitely important, I bet it ties with the economic difficulties that our families are facing.
Immigration raids have been a big issue in many places around the country, here in Ohio?
Sort of. There's only been four since 2003 workplace raids, true raids where they go into a workplace and they're looking for an individual. So while there's certainly a perception that immigration is coming after people and raiding businesses, that hasn't been the case. What they are doing is stepping up deportation orders. They're definitely sweeping jails, removing people who are traffic violators, perhaps they're driving without a driver's license or something like that. They're removing those people at a definitely an increased rate, as well as people who have committed felonies and things like that.
And I wanted to ask you about, one of the people you profile is a young woman who lives here in Ohio, here illegally, working in Columbus, and having, it seems like living a life that is, to a greater or lesser degree, always in fear, looking over her shoulder for fear that the next person is going to turn her in and she will be deported.
Yeah, and that was something that we saw in a lot of cases with the people that we talked to. People didn't want to be identified in the newspaper, obviously, because they're undocumented and they're worried about deportation, but not because they're worried that ICE is going to get their name. They're worried that their neighbors are going to call.
Neighbors are going to call and rat them out.
Yes. And that was an issue with Maria because she does work in a position where she comes in contact with the general population. And so she, even in the photos that we took, she didn't want her face shown because she was worried she'd be recognized.
And this is an issue not just here in Ohio. You both traveled to Oklahoma as part of the series. One of the proposed laws here in Ohio is based on a law that was passed in Oklahoma. And it's had the effect of, well, it's had some unintended effects, but it's had its intended effect of driving immigrants, legal and illegal, out of the state of Oklahoma. Jill?
Neither Stephanie and I went. There was a third member
of our team,
Todd Jones, and he went to Oklahoma and spent a week there, had made a lot of contacts ahead of time. And he was truly amazed at how it had changed so many people so quickly and so drastically. Oklahoma is a lot like Ohio in terms of, you know, Midwestern kind of homegrown values. And all of a sudden, it was a state where you were either on this side or the other. There was no in between. It was just you're either for them or you're against them. And the law that took effect there kind of just popped out of the blue and became law before anybody really even understood it. And once it took effect, that's when they started realizing the real consequences. And I just want to share one number with you. Nobody wants to see illegal immigrants tapping into public benefits. That's pretty much across the board. But when they did this, the way they crafted their law, they kicked off 6,000 people from their Medicaid rolls because of the way the law was written and the documents required. The vast majority were white children. They were U.S. citizens that were because of the way the law was written. So there was a lot of unintended things that happened, and I'm not sure that they've quite figured out how to deal with all that yet, but all of those people had to go one by one to their local Medicaid office and say, you know, my child here needs Medicaid. Here's her birth certificate. She is a U.S. citizen. So there was a lot of things that went that happened there, and it just has become a state of fear, a fear on both sides. You know, the immigrants fear the citizens fear the immigrants, and even citizens who are immigrants are caught in one side or the other.
And you do note that a federal judge has suspended parts of that law for fear that they are unconstitutional. You also point out the law is, despite the problems with it, wildly popular in the state of Oklahoma.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And a small thing, I was just in Oklahoma a couple of weeks ago. They would say Southwestern, but anyway, let's see if we can get some callers in on the conversation. Our guests are Jill Riepenhoff of the Columbus Dispatch and Stephanie Chekalinsky of the Fronteras de la Noticia. Am I getting that anywhere close to right?
Fronteras de la Noticia.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Let's see if we can get Jim on the line. And let's go to Jim. I think I was trying to go to Jim. I was hitting the wrong button. There we go. Jim in Charlotte, North Carolina. I apologize, Jim.
Yes, thank you. Listen, one of the problems we're having in North Carolina, of course, you know, Wachovia has not done exactly really well, so we're looking at a massive layoff, but we're looking at a slowing of the housing industry, and we're seeing a backlash against illegal immigration down here. And, you know, don't get me wrong, like the guest said, not all immigrants are illegal, and most certainly our Hispanic community contributes fantastically to our economy, but there's a lot of fear that we also don't want to be like Texas and California that end up having hospitals and other social services overran with illegal immigrants, and we're going to end up being like California, owing $17 billion in debt and failing hospitals.
And
you know, it's there's not a fear of illegal immigration. We want the law enforced. End of story.
Okay, but those exact issues that Brian is talking, excuse me, Jim is talking about, your series focused on a number of those points, trying to nail down exactly how much in government money illegal immigration is costing people, and it's a very fuzzy number.
It is an incredibly fuzzy number, and it's one of the, I think that that adds fuel to this whole debate because nobody really knows, and there's only just very small slivers of information. But coincidentally, one of the slivers of information we did track down was from North Carolina. There was a couple of researchers from the University of North Carolina that looked at the Medicaid spending in that state, and they found out that only 1% of all Medicaid spending was spent on illegal immigrants. And those are largely for emergency medical situations or childbirth. And when I mean emergency medical situations, I mean like car accident, fell off the roof, broke their leg, you know, life-threatening, very serious injuries, not I've got the flu.
And while I don't disagree, I think one of the big things we don't look at is what about housing inmates in county jails, where 40% of our population is Hispanic in the county jails. Not only that, but educational resources. We're having a big debate on whether to provide illegal immigrants with access to community colleges down here.
And that's a big debate in other places around the country. But I did want to get back to Stephanie Chekalinsky. One other fact you came up with was the amount of Social Security money that is not being distributed. It's piling up in a fund, enough Social Security money, because they don't match, the names and the numbers don't match, and enough Social Security money to fund the war in Iraq.
Yeah, we could write a check for Iraq right now with the money that's in the suspense fund. Not all that money is paid into the fund by undocumented immigrants. It's paid in when Social Security can't match a name to a number on a W-2. So they hold that money hoping that the discrepancy will be cleared up and they'll be able to give that money to the appropriate person. A lot of times when immigrants are filing their W-2s, they're using a made-up Social Security number, or they're using a stolen Social Security number, or they're borrowing one from one of their friends. And so their names and numbers don't match. So as of now, there's $586 billion in the suspense fund.
And they can't, the government can't spend that. It does collect interest on it, but
that's right.
Less and less interest every day, apparently.
Well, yeah, depending on where they've invested, I suppose.
I suspect that's right.
It is also interesting to note that with an ITIN number, which is a tax identification number you can get from the government, an undocumented immigrant can pay income tax as well.
Thanks very much. Stay with us. And Jim, thanks very much for the call. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan at the studios of the WOUB radio network in Athens, Ohio. Oklahoma last year passed one of the toughest laws in the country against illegal immigration. Mississippi followed months later. Virginia, Alabama, Pennsylvania have all cracked down on illegal immigrants. According to the Columbus Dispatch, more than 1,200 state and local immigration laws have been introduced around the country so far this year. Parts of Ohio are now considering similar legislation that some call tough, others call draconian. We want to hear from callers in other states not along the border with Mexico. How is the issue of immigration playing out where you live? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Our guests are Jill Riepenhoff of the Columbus Dispatch and Stephanie Chekalinsky from Fronteras de la Noticia, a Spanish language newspaper in Columbus. We got this email from Carson in Cincinnati. I'm a mental health counselor at a nonprofit agency in Butler County, Ohio. I can tell you that Butler County's policies have harmed greatly not only Latinos, undocumented immigrants, permanent residents, and citizens, but our general population. I work specifically with Spanish speakers, and I see how terrified my clients are. Women are afraid to report domestic violence for fear of the police. And I wonder, do you reporters see similar situations? I know Butler County was in some ways the epicenter of your story. And let's go to Stephanie Chekalinsky.
Yeah, we see that. Within the community, there is a good deal of fear of authority, partially because the line between local authority and federal authority is called into question by some of these legislative efforts made by states. Currently, immigration is a federal is under federal jurisdiction, so Immigration and Customs Enforcement usually handles it. But in Butler County, the Sheriff's Department has received training from ICE that allows them to enforce some immigration law, and so it makes it difficult for members of the local community to decide whether or not to call the police, especially if they know that that local police officer can enforce immigration law. So if you're the victim of domestic violence, you may not call.
Joining us now from the studios of WMUB in Oxford, Ohio, is Sheriff Richard K. Jones, the sheriff of Butler County in western Ohio. And Sheriff Jones, it's good to have you with us today.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Glad to be here.
And I want to know, given that training, why did you think it was necessary? And is it helping you to stop illegal immigrants? How is it working on this issue of immigration in Butler County?
Well, to begin with, 287G is our part of that is just the corrections end of it, the jail. We can't enforce any federal immigration law outside the jail. That's not true. But we have several people from other countries all over the world. At any given time in my jail, I have 1,200 prisoners total. Out of that 1,200, I probably have between 50 and 60 from probably, on average, a month from probably 13 different countries. We have people in my jail from Russia, China, Mongolia. A majority are Latino from Mexico. And but the fear factor, I will admit that the fear factor comes from the countries that they come from. They fear the police. It doesn't matter what county or state or city they're from. They fear the police. The police is very corrupt. In Mexico alone, 60% of the cities in Mexico are controlled by the drug cartel. So when they come to the United States, they have a fear for the local police to begin with.
You are perceived as one of the people who's behind, who's motivating the legislators to crack down even harder.
That's true. In Butler County, we're the eighth largest in Ohio of 88 counties. Our population is roughly 350 to 360,000 population. In that, I probably have, within our local jurisdiction, within my jail, just locally from the other police departments, probably 6 to 7% are illegals that are in our jail for committing state crime. These are not people that are in my jail for just being here illegally. When I say state crime, this is crimes of driving without a driver's license, drugs, domestic violence, just like anybody else that's in our jail. And the problem that we have with it here is that the violence has increased, not from the illegals that are here just illegally, but the ones that come here and commit crime. There's a large portion of them that are criminals before they come here. And the drugs have increased in larger amounts coming from Mexico, and the violence has increased just within our county borders, or the next county over from us. We've probably had just in the past 12 months, approximately four individuals were murdered, stabbed to death in the county right next to us, all illegals. We just had two shot to death in our county, illegals. And we've had maybe one or two other murders, illegals. They leave this just in this community here. And there is a fear, but there's a fear that our government is not doing enough to enforce the federal laws.
And there's similarly, you have chambers of commerce in places, certainly in Ohio and various other places around the country, saying, look, we need immigrant workers. They are vital to the American economy. And you think, even if that's true, that the situation you're describing, the threat that you're describing, outweighs that?
Oh, yes. There's plenty of American workers to do the work. Here in this community, we're not against people coming here legally. 1.3 million come to this country legally every year. We have over 200 visas in this country. We have close to 6 to 8 work visas come here legally. We're a nation of immigrants. And if you can come here legally and you come on a work visa and you want to work, everybody's fine with that. The problem we have is when you come here illegally, and if you're a company that hires people illegally, you're violating the law. That's why they use the word illegal. Mm-hmm. And when these companies say that it's cheap labor, what is cheap labor to them, but it's not cheap to the rest of us.
And I understand the federal government has done relatively little to punish companies that are involved, and the immigrants feel like they're getting the short end of this stick. But anyway, let's get some more callers in on this conversation. Let's go instead to Mark, and Mark's with us from New Britain in Connecticut.
Hi, good day. I wanted to give you the view from Connecticut. We've had an interesting situation develop over the course of this year in New Haven.
There was one very large immigration raid there.
Yeah, well, the raid is only part of it. What didn't necessarily make the national news is that the government of the city of New Haven began issuing what they called the Elm City Identification Card. This was a photo ID, a non-driver ID that anybody in the city could get, regardless of documentation status. And the motivation behind this was to aid in law enforcement so that people who were the victims of crimes would not be deterred from reporting because they didn't have any valid identification to present to the authorities to identify themselves. The thought here was that if they issued this card, then regardless of documentation status, people would feel able to come forward if they were the victims of a crime, so criminals wouldn't have the undocumented immigrant population as easy targets.
And I wanted to ask Sheriff Jones about that. We've heard this a lot, that fearing deportation, people who may be here legally or illegally, don't come forward to help your investigations. Do you find that to be true?
Yes, that is true. But again, you have to realize from the countries whence they come, they have a very much distrust with local law enforcement, no matter what country they're from, because they're so corrupt. And when they come here, they live in immigrant communities, and they're very withdrawn. They have their own stores, their own communities. Everything is pretty well kept inside, a secret. There's a high rate of domestic violence. These people are abused by their own people. They have car lots. For an example, in this community here, we busted three car lots that were people from other countries were selling to the illegals at a markup of three times what the vehicle was worth. And they were actually using the police. They had people calling and identifying themselves as the local police. If they didn't make these payments, they were going to be arrested. But there's abuse going on with the illegals that are here, the hardworking illegals that are here. Our government doesn't seem to do anything on either side. They end up being the victims. They work 16, 17 hours a day. They get fired at random. They get injured on the job. Nobody pays. They tell them to get out. They have no benefits. They have nowhere to go. They move on. They get injured, and they don't get paid properly. And our government is a nation of compromise, and our two candidates running for president won't even discuss the issue, and there should be something done to resolve this issue so the United States could move on.
Mark, I heard you trying to get in there. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, before we get too deep into abuse internal to the immigrant community, you might want to hear the rest of the story, which is the abuse from outside the immigrant community. When the Elm City card was issued, a newspaper in Manchester, Connecticut, some 45 miles away, filed a Freedom of Information request for the names and addresses of everyone who requested one, with the purpose of publicizing and targeting these people. Fortunately, the courts in Connecticut have held the line and refused to order that disclosure.
We should point out that New Haven describes itself as the Elm City, and that's the origin of the law.
That's
right?
The Elm City card. That's
yes,
right.
All right. Mark, thanks very much for your call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
And I wanted to thank you, Sheriff Jones. But before I let you go, it sounds, the way you're describing it, you have a lot of sympathy for the plight that these people find themselves in.
Oh, I have a lot of sympathy. It's the biggest mess for all of us in this country. We should be ashamed of ourselves that our government will not address this issue. We should be ashamed that we allow this to go on, that there's abuses, and there is no compromise because our politicians have become cowards on both parties. And the American people, that's why their approval rating is so low. All we want is some help, and they're more bent on running for president of the United States and having control of the Congress and the Senate than they are these people, these poor people that are being smuggled into this country and abused.
Thank you very much, Sheriff Jones, for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Sheriff Jones, the sheriff of Butler County, with us today from the studios of WMUB in Oxford, Ohio. And let's bring another voice into the conversation. That's Ezra Escudero. He's director of the Office of Ohio Latino Affairs in the state of Ohio, responsible for compiling and providing the commission information about and advice on solutions to the problems of Hispanic and Latino community in the state of Ohio. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Ezra Escudero with us from the studios of WCBE in Columbus, Ohio. And I wanted to ask you the situation that Sheriff Jones was describing, that we've heard the reporters describe as well. Clearly, what's the state's role in this, and as the state considers this legislation?
I'd say that the state finds itself in a very precarious situation because the scenarios that Sheriff Jones describes are right on target. You find a lot of communities where you see immigrant growth. You also see a growth in crime rates. But not just from the sources that the sheriff mentioned. You also find a lot of folks, American citizens, unscrupulous businesses, who particularly prey upon the immigrant communities. And rather than working to outreach to these immigrant communities, documented and undocumented, working with them to root out the bad apples, so to speak, they get terrorized from both sides. They get terrorized by the criminal element, who are preying on them viciously, and then they are also afraid to approach law enforcement. So when these local issues and community issues then get brought up to attention at the level of the State House in the Ohio General Assembly, unfortunately, as the sheriff mentioned, that's where politics comes into play. And rather than talking about ways, productive ways, to address these challenges that we face, too many times these issues become wedge issues and political hot buttons designed to stir up sentiment rather than solve problems.
Stay with us, if you would. We're talking about immigration beyond the borders. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we want to bring some other listeners into the conversation. We have somebody here in the studio in Athens, Ohio.
Hello. My name is Dane McCarthy, and I'm from Athens. And I have a comment, and I'd like to just say that the exploitation of the workers starts in Mexico and Central America. And it's resulting from, it's a complex issue, but it somewhat, a lot of it results from NAFTA, which caused an explosion of maquiladoras along the border between U.S.
Those are factories along the border.
Right. And right now, the owners are finding that the border is not the cheapest location, and they're moving, according to the latest information I have, down to Central America, where instead of paying the workers $5 a day, they can pay the workers $3 a day.
They're also moving a lot of those jobs to China and Vietnam and places like that.
Yeah. Well, China didn't work out for them because they don't respect intellectual property rights, and they just rip off the Sony products.
Well, you're raising a point, which is simply that a lot of this are issues that go way beyond Butler County, Ohio, way beyond Columbus, Ohio, where the state capital is, to Washington, D.C. And as the sheriff said, Jill Riepenhoff, this is a federal issue on a lot of levels, but a lot of places aren't waiting for federal legislation. As the sheriff said, there's not a lot happening in Washington.
No, not at all. And the issue, like, regarding NAFTA, it was kind of interesting if you think back to the primary when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were campaigning in Ohio. They talked about NAFTA a lot. When they were campaigning in Texas, which was another really hotly contested state for the Democratic primary, they didn't talk about it at all. It's sort of a tale of two nations. And I think that once immigration and issues like this they resonate in the heartland, that's when they finally start paying attention in Washington and maybe doing something about it. It's not an issue that one state can solve. And the problem is then you have one state doing one thing, another state doing something else, a third state taking a completely different tact. And that's the way it is right now. It's across the board. You have states saying, we're not going to do anything at all about it. You have cities saying, come here, we welcome you, it's great, we're never going to bat an eye. You have states saying, get out. You have other states just throwing their hands up in the air, not knowing what to do. So it's creating a very crazy, crazy patchwork across the country and even within states.
And Ezra Escudero, we just have a few seconds left with you, but I want to ask you, I apologize for scrimping on your time, but nevertheless, do you see any solution and any solution that can be a state solution rather than a federal solution?
The first and foremost area for this problem being solved must be in Washington. Unless we have a national level comprehensive strategy on immigration reform and addressing these issues, immigrants will continue to suffer, American workers will continue to suffer, and we'll have, as has been shared here, a patchwork of different laws and standards across the country.
Ezra Escudero, again, I apologize for the small amount of time we were able to speak with you, but thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Ezra Escudero with us from WCBE in Columbus. He's the director of the Office of Latino Affairs here in the state of Ohio. Our thanks also to our reporters, Jill Riepenhoff of the Columbus Dispatch and Stephanie Chekalinsky of the Fronteras de la Noticias. I think I got it right that time.
That's right.
Thank you very much for joining us here today. They worked on an article, and you can get a link to that on our blog at talkofthenation.npr.org/blogofthenation. I'm Neil Conant. Stay with us. We'll have some music when we come back. This is NPR News. Our next guest is a founding member of the Jefferson Airplane in Hot Tuna. He lives here in Athens, Ohio. Jorma Kaukonen runs the Fur Peace Ranch Guitar Camp here in southeastern Ohio. A radio show of concerts from there airs on the WOUB radio network. Jorma Kaukonen's newest album is called Stars in My Crown, and he's kind enough to join us here today. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to talk with... We've got a couple of fans here, too. If you have a question for Jorma Kaukonen, give us a call, 800-989-8255, or zap us an email, talk@npr.org. Why don't you start us off with a tune?
Sure. I was... Thanks for having me. I'm a local guy. I live here, you know.
It's
nice to see what you look like. I listen to your show all the time.
Sorry about the shock, though.
I was thinking about doing a song that I wrote. You know, we get insignificant amounts of money for doing that, but but I figured I'm going to do a song by Reverend Gary Davis called Let Us Get Together, because I think that maybe we ought to be getting together on something here. So, well, let us get together right down here. Get together, children, yeah. Get together, I said, right down here. Get together, children, head right down here. Well, let us do our living right down here. Do our living, children, yeah. Do our living right down here. Do our living, children, right down here. Well, let us do our voting right down here. Do our voting, I said, right down. Do our voting, I said, right down here. Do our voting, children, head right down here.
Jorma Kaukonen, did Gary Davis write all those words?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, or he said, God give them to him.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's see about that. Anyway, most of us, you say you live here.
I do.
Most of us associate your name with San Francisco and guitars with pickups on them.
That's true. I do that also. I'm actually from Washington, D.C. I'm an East Coast guy, and my grandfather lived in Marietta, and I went to school at Antioch College before they closed it, and so I have an Ohio history. I've been here for almost 20 years now.
And the Fur Peace Ranch, what's that about?
Well, the Fur Peace Ranch, it's called the Fur Peace Ranch because it's a fur peace from anywhere. and we have a music school down there, and we're open from April through November. We have a lot of really wonderful artists that play, and we have, as you know, a little radio show here on WOUB, and I'm proud to be a member of the community here.
And November through April, when the weather here is not so great.
Well, you know, we're about wintry mix down here. It's not that bad.
You know, I meant to challenge people around the country. Tons of songs about rain, tons of songs. There's no songs about wintry mix.
I can't even begin to think what would rhyme with that, but I'm going to think about it for a while.
Sure, I'm a fan of Stevie Nicks. Boy, do I love... Anyway.
Wait a minute. Let me write that down.
I noticed that the Athens News recently asked its readers to name the coolest person in Athens County, and Jorma Kaukonen, you came in second.
I did? Good grief.
Joining us now is the bona fide coolest person in Athens County, Hillary Berhans, and it's great to have you with us here.
It's nice to be here, Neil.
Like Jorma Kaukonen, you're a musician, a banjo player, and I should point out, I have probably inadvertently heard you. We both spent parts of our summers in a part of Massachusetts across a different part of a small lake locals there call a pond, so I've probably heard your banjo music just coming across the water.
Maybe, yeah. I've visited my friend Peggy Conant in her place there, so.
Well, would you be play us a tune on your banjo now?
Sure.
Hillary Berhans, what was that tune?
That's a tune called Pretty Little Dog. It's a traditional tune.
Ah, and I have to ask, what do you think qualifies you to win the election as the coolest person in Athens County?
I've always suspected that playing the banjo made you really cool, you know, uh-huh. But I didn't really... I don't know. My employees did a lot of voting, I think, because we have a restaurant here in town, sort of a Silk Road cuisine restaurant called Salam, and I noticed we won... first runner-up for best place to work, which makes me think that my employees and their friends must have been doing a lot of voting.
Stuffing the ballot box, you think. Yeah.
Yeah, since the first place was Ohio University, and they can offer a lot better benefits than I can. So,
let's see if we can get a listener on the line. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And our first caller is Tom, and Tom's calling us from Rochester. Rochester, New York, Tom?
Hey, Jorma, how you doing?
Never better. How are you?
Not bad. You did a show here at the Penny Arcade probably 20 years ago, and I was doing monitors, and it was just a wonderful time.
Thanks. Did I do anything I need to apologize for?
I'm sorry?
Did I do anything I need to apologize for?
Not at all.
Good.
No, you were here with Jack, actually, back then.
Jack?
You moved from Woodstock? Weren't you in Woodstock at that point?
I was.
Woodstock, New York.
I did. I moved from Woodstock to here.
And why'd you move from Woodstock, New York, to here?
Well, there are a number of reasons. You know, the Lord works in mysterious ways. I had a friend that owned a farm down here, and he called me in 89. And I came down and looked at this piece of property, which had nothing on it but multifloral rows and pricker bushes and stuff. I just had a feeling it was a good idea to get it, and so I bought it for probably less than it would cost to heat the place I was renting in New York for a year. So I moved down here.
Okay, that's interesting.
Well, we miss you. Get back up here.
We'll get up there.
All right, Tom. Thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it. We also have somebody here in the studio in Athens, Ohio.
Hi. Yeah, I'm Diane McVeigh. And in fact, recently I heard a show on NPR that was talking about music and math and education with children. And I know, Yorma, you have a young child now.
I do.
I'm wondering if you have some ideas of how we can get more music into the schools, because financially it's a problem.
Well, first of all, we need a government that supports that kind of stuff. I worked in Australia at a festival in November of last year, and they really support the artists down there. It's just a different climate. It's totally a different climate. We just don't have the money to do it. So, you know, I guess you need a lot of volunteers.
And a government to commit to it, given the crisis situation that we're going in. You can't do anything but believe the money's going to get tighter.
Unfortunately, it looks that way.
Yeah. Let's see if we can. Is there another caller on the line? Let's get to somebody else. Go ahead, please. Who is this?
Tim.
Tim. Hi, Tim. Where are you calling from?
Portland, Oregon.
Go ahead, Tim.
Jorma, I'm a good friend of Terry Robb's here in Portland.
Sir.
And he's a marvelous player. I understood that you guys got back together for a little while with Jefferson Airplane. Were you involved in that?
It was 20 years ago, but who's counting?
No. I mean, really recently. I remember.
No, goodness, I
have that album.
You know, just so you can file this away, my friend Jack and I, who we mentioned, he's a bass player. He and I have played together since 58. We've been friends and cohorts for 50 years. Grace Slick, God bless her, is doing art, and she's resolved never to play again. So this completely removes any question of us getting back together again. I don't even have to think about it, because without her, it's not the band.
Okay.
Well, I understood that she was there, but she wasn't on stage or anything.
I think you're thinking about the Starship. That's another being.
Yeah, I understand Paul Kantner's thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I really love your playing. I play Sea Child whenever I can. I can almost play it.
Bless you. Come on down to the ranch. It's so easy, I'm embarrassed to show you.
Well, I know how it goes. It's GCD with a sliding seat.
Don't give away the secret. Anyway, thank
you. Well, everybody should know. I should know how flaky Marty Ballin is, too. Never mind.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
We're talking with Jorma Kaukonen, the founding member, as you might have heard, of the Jefferson Airplanes, and the first runner-up for the coolest person in Athens County. And with the winner of that contest, Hillary Burhans, they're with us here at WOUB Radio in Athens. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I wonder, have you guys ever played together?
You know, we haven't, and we should.
We probably
should. I need
should
to take some banjo
days.
Lessons from you. That's what I need to do.
Well, every time I look at you playing guitar, I can't tell where you end and the guitar, where the guitar stops and you end. It's so seamless that I just am blown away.
I've been doing it for a long time. Thanks.
Yes.
You want to try a tune?
Sure. Me or Hill?
Why don't we hear from you? You guys haven't rehearsed.
If we're going to play a tune sometime, we should get together.
Yeah,
national public radio.
People talk about the magic that happens.
Right.
Magic could happen,
but it probably wouldn't happen right here, right now.
Okay. Well, Jorma, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. I'd like to do a song that's on this last album I did for Red House Records, and it's a Lightning Hopkins song. I loved Lightning when I was a kid, and it's a song called Come Back Baby. Well, come back, baby. Baby, please don't go. Way I love you, child. I want the world to know. Well, come back, babe. Talk it over one more time. Well, this old world was made one day. Come back, baby. Shine, I don't go away. Well, come back, baby. Talk it over.
one more time. Well, come back, baby. Baby, please don't go. Way I love you, child. I want the world to know. Well, come back, babe. Talk it over.
Jorma Kaukonen. I'm going to ask Hillary Berhans to play us out. I'm going to do one of those cool radio voiceover things as she plays a tune to wind up the program here.
We do have a new CD, which you can go to hotpointstringband.com to locate. A little Hangman's Reel just to take us out.
Jorma Kaukonen and Hillary Berhans, the two coolest people in Athens County, joined us here in the studios of the WOUB Radio Network in Athens. You can find links to both their websites on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Talk of the Nation today was produced by David Gura and Barry Hardiman. Our director is Glenn Uten. Our broadcast engineered by Drew Reynolds and Ohio University alumnus Kurt Stallnaker. Go Bobcats. Special thanks to Genevieve Jeffers, Tim Sharp, Fred Knight, and the entire staff of the WOUB Radio Network. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Athens, Ohio.